Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fall of the Core by Rick Brown. Narrated by Jeffrey Kafer. Chapter 1. From Ariel. Pay attention. The text message flashed in Hannah's personal visual space, ironically across the face of the very man who was boring her to death. Reply. I am, Hannah thought. The neurodigital implant at the base of her skull converted her reply into a signal and transmitted it back to her producer. From Ariel. No, you're not, her producer messaged back. I can see it in your eyes, and so can he, and so can the viewers. Hannah squinted and cocked her head a bit, trying to look interested as she stared at the man sitting across the desk. Digital viruses have been used for centuries, the man continued, since the dawn of the Internet. He paused, looking expectantly at Hannah for her next question. Message. Oh, crap, I'm lost, Hannah thought. Her producer was one step ahead of her as usual, a reply floating in the air in front of Hannah as it filled her visual space. From Ariel. If this particular virus has been around for so long, then surely there must be a way to protect our systems from it. Without missing a beat, Hannah immediately asked the question. The problem is that this virus is quite adept at disguising itself. It changes its structure with almost every instance, making it particularly difficult to detect. In nearly every confirmed case of the virus, it was not discovered until after it had already begun to affect the target system. Hence the name Twister, as it constantly twists itself into new, unrecognizable forms. Unrecognizable? Hannah asked. But it's computer code, right? Lines of characters on a screen telling the computer what to do. When you look at as much computer code as we do day in and day out, you begin to see patterns. It's like learning a foreign language. Once you become fluent, you no longer translate it in your head. You simply understand. Even with computer code? From Ariel. You're straying, her producer warned. So if the Twister virus is impossible to recognize, how are you going to neutralize it? Hannah asked. Not impossible, the man corrected. Just difficult. Extremely difficult. However, just because it's difficult to recognize doesn't mean we can't protect ourselves, he explained calmly. The question we should be asking, though, is why? Why? Hannah echoed. She looked to her visual space for another cue from Ariel, but saw nothing. Yes, why are we doing this? What is their end goal? He questioned, more to himself than to her. We believe the authors of this code are still in the testing and verification phase. That's why they've been so random and widespread in their attacks. They're not only testing their virus, they're testing our response to it. Eventually, they'll begin targeting bigger, more critical systems. If we are not more aggressive in our defense, Twister could create more trouble than it already has. A lot more. From Ariel. Coming up on 10 minutes, the next text message informed Hannah. Let's wrap it up. Professor Dantmore, will your organization find a way to identify the Twister virus before it strikes and neutralize it before any damage is done? Eventually, yes. We have more than 1,000 of the Earth's best security programmers working on the Twister project. We will find a way to stop it. We always do. It's just a matter of time. Anna sensed one of Barry's imaging orbs hovering past her left side, her good side, signaling the end of the netcast. She smiled politely at the professor. Thank you, Professor Dantmore. Anna turned to her left, facing the floating image orb as it hovered at her eye level a meter away. She dipped her chin slightly, positioning her head to the flattering angle that her videographer insisted made her look both sexy and intelligent. Is Twister a major threat, or is it just another digital nuisance like so many others in the past? Many have argued that we have become too dependent on technology, and that makes us vulnerable. Yet, because of our technology, starvation, disease, and even war are all distant memories of days long past. Perhaps annoyances like the Twister virus are just the price we pay for a better life. The good men and women here at the Dantmore Institute are trying to reduce that cost. For all of us. She paused for a moment, changing the angle of her head as Barry had instructed in the past, before closing out an interview. I'm Hannah Bull, reporting from the Dantmore Institute for Digital Security. Gifford floated on the edge of consciousness. He knew he was alive. He could feel air going in and out of his nose, his chest rising and falling. but there was nothing but darkness, and the only sound was a low hum that seemed to surround him. The next thing he realized was a floating sensation, and there were gentle tugs at his chest, abdomen, legs, and arms. Straps of some kind, holding him in place. Stasis. His eyes opened slowly at first, fluttering a bit as if they were almost stuck. Eye boogers. The one thing they had never solved about stasis, at least not for everyone. He forced his eyes open, turning his head slightly and looking around, confirming he was inside a stasis chamber.
Rhea?
He asked, his voice scratchy and weak. Yes, Captain. The AI voice replied over the speaker in his stasis chamber. How do you feel?
Like crap.
Your vitals are stable and your metabolic functions are normal. You are dehydrated, but that is to be expected.
No kidding.
He groaned as the lights outside his chamber flickered on.
Where are we?
2.5 light years from Earth, Rhea reported. All systems are functioning normally and all decks have been conditioned for habitation. Shall I begin waking the crew?
Just Maggie, he instructed. I don't want a repeat of the last waking.
Understandable. Are you ready to exit your stasis chamber?
No, but let's do it anyway.
Activating artificial gravity, the AI replied as Gif's stasis chamber began to tilt upward and open. He felt himself settling back onto the padded bed of the chamber as it tilted, finally laying on his back at a 45-degree angle.
Let's start with 50%.
Of course. Gif's restraints disconnected and retracted into the sides of his stasis chamber. He hated this part. The first attempts at moving were the worst. Nothing worked right. Every movement required concentration, as if his brain was not aware of his own extremities. Luckily, it didn't last long, and soon he was sitting upright, as if leaning against a counter. Gif looked around the stasis room, noting the other 11 pods in the compartment, only 5 of which were occupied. The pod of his medtech, Maggie, was the only pod glowing orange around the base, indicating that her wake cycle was in progress. In 10 minutes, there would be competition for the nearest bathroom.
Time to pee, he thought, struggling to his feet.
And we're out, Barry announced from the corner of the room as the red light on the primary imaging orb hovering in front of Hannah went dark. He pressed a button on the control pad, and all 6 orbs flew over, returning to the docking station on the floor. Ariel leaned closer to Barry as the last orb landed in its cradle. Replace that dazed, disinterested expression she had on her face with something more perky. You know where I mean, just before the professor said the same type of virus had been around for centuries.
No problem, Barry replied as he bent down to close the lid over the imaging orbs. I'll head back to the hotel and start the preliminary edits.
Ariel nodded in agreement. Hannah glanced nervously at Professor Dantmore as she stood, embarrassed.
It's quite all right, Miss Bull, the professor reassured her as he looked up. Most people find what we do quite boring. In fact, we're now the last group to use humans in our analytical work. Everyone else uses AIs.
Why don't you use them? Hannah wondered.
There's just something wrong with using artificial intelligence algorithms to study other algorithms.
But aren't the AIs faster and more accurate?
Yes, but they still lack the instincts that humans possess. Even after 300 years of using artificial intelligence, the closest we have ever come to achieving the instinctual nature of the human mind in digital form are the human consciousness uploads, which, as you know, come with their own set of problems.
Now that would have been more interesting to talk about. Anna grinned as she reached out and shook the professor's hand. Unfortunately, that wasn't my assignment.
Professor Dantmore? A colleague called from the doorway.
The professor looked up, then turned back to Hannah.
It was a pleasure, Miss Bull, he said, excusing himself.
Hannah watched the professor and his assistant move to speak in the hallway just outside the door, noticing not only the worried expression of the assistant, but of the professor himself. Once they left, she turned away, walking over to her producer. The expression on her face was completely different, more like that of a disappointed mother.
For the record, I was paying attention. I was just considering my next question.
Uh-huh, Ariel muttered skeptically. Barry called over to the technician standing to the side of the room, ignoring the exchange between Hannah and Ariel.
You guys have point-to-point?
Of course, the technician replied.
Mind if I use it?
The terminal is in the next room, the technician said. Follow me. Barry turned to Ariel, who had a curious expression on her face. If I upload the raw file to the client from here, it'll save us the cost of the point-to-point link later.
What about the edits? Ariel questioned.
I can send them the edits as a macro after we finish the final cut. It's a tiny file that we can send through the public net.
Sounds good.
Ariel looked back at Hannah. Next time you might want to do your pre-interview research before you leave the hotel.
Right, Hannah replied, ignoring her suggestion. Did you see the look on their faces just now? I think something happened.
She looked back at her friend.
Maybe we should poke around a bit?
Ariel shook her head and sighed. At least you're using the angles that Barry told you about.
Seriously, I think there may be more here.
We get paid to do the interview, Ariel reminded her, not to poke around.
But we don't have the budget, Hannah,
Ariel snapped, cutting her off.
You never listen.
Hey, I listen.
Since when?
Ariel wondered with a laugh. I've known you for 10 years now. If there's one thing you're not good at, it's listening to the advice of others.
Hannah rolled her eyes as she grabbed her bag from the chair.
That was the old Hannah. You're looking at the new, improved Hannah.
I see, Ariel conceded, picking up her own bag. And is the new, improved Hannibal finally going to land us a cushy full-time gig with one of the major news nets?
Of course, Hannah insisted as they headed out the door and down the corridor. But not if you keep lining up these snooze fests.
Hey, they pay the bills. This one even put a few credits into our savings.
They turned the corner and headed across the lobby toward the main entrance.
We wouldn't need to put credits into savings if we uncovered a story on our own, Hannah argued. That's how we land a cushy gig.
That savings account kept us from being on the streets when we got stuck in Philly last year, or did you already forget about that little fiasco?
How could I, with you always reminding me?
Hannah retorted as they exited the building. Hannah paused a moment, taking in the city. Automated electric vehicles of all shapes and sizes packed the streets in an endless flow of traffic. Buildings towered in the afternoon sun, casting long shadows to the east. Elevated walkways stretched between buildings around every intersection on the 2nd, 5th, and 10th levels. Monorail trains cruised overhead, transporting passengers from the elevated platforms at the 2nd levels. And finally, above it all, countless shuttles flitted about on invisible pathways in the sky, ferrying their privileged passengers from one building top to another. Anna loved the feeling of being in a big city. To her, it meant endless possibilities.
Are we going to have time to visit our parents? Hannah asked, turning back to Ariel.
Not this time, I'm afraid. We have to be in Boston the day after tomorrow.
Then we have plenty of time, Hannah concluded.
Not if we're going to take the train. Hannah's head fell back slightly as she moaned in discontent.
24 hours on a train again? For once, can't we just take a shuttle?
We can't afford it, Hannah.
Then can we at least take the tube?
We can't afford that either.
Let me guess, because we have to put credits into savings.
In case you pull another stunt like the one in Philly, we can't live on what the pop nets pay, Hannah, you know that.
We could if we weren't leasing all that extra FI gear,
Hannah argued as she started down the street. You know damn well that all the major news nets want full immersion now, Ariel reminded her as they headed up the stairs to the monorail platform, and that equipment is expensive to lease.
We could make just as much money doing the tabloid stuff using simple high-def minis. We could pick up a 3-pack for half of what we pay Barry per week.
We agreed, Ariel reminded her. We're real journalists, not pop goons. I'd rather be working as a junior production assistant in some snippet clearinghouse than doing the tabloid stuff.
They're crossovers, you know,
Hannah insisted as the next monorail train came to a stop and its doors opened. Lara Knox, Blaze Hunter, Michael Bennett, all pretty faces and no substance.
Pretty faces that get all the best stories, Hannah added, and ride around in private shuttles instead of taking overnight trains between coasts.
The deal is until we hit 30, Ariel reminded Hannah, and we're not there yet. Hannah looked at Ariel as they stepped onto the monorail train and grabbed hold of the overhead rail.
10 months.
And for those 10 months, we continue with a plan. You, me, and a videographer, with full immersion gear.
I know, I know.
Hannah gazed out the window of the monorail as it pulled away from the platform and made its way to the next stop. While it passed between the buildings, she caught a glimpse of San Diego Bay in the distance. She had grown up not far from downtown, and this city had always been one of her favorites.
What's next?
Epidemiologist in Boston, Ariel replied. He's an expert on the chlamydia virus.
Sounds like another snoozer to me,
Anna groaned, rolling her eyes. "People are dying from the Claria virus, Hannah."
"Yeah, I know," she grumbled as she gazed out the window of the monorail. "But if we don't have anything new and interesting to tell them about it, the viewers don't care."
"It's your job to make them care, Hannah. That's why you need to do your pre-interview research before you actually arrive at the location."
"Yes, Mother," Hannah replied.
Gifford entered Rihanna Locken's galley, data pad in hand. "What's the word, Cap?" Donnie asked as he picked at his plate of food. "Any news from home?"
"Still too far out to pick up public broadcasts, but I've got 2 years of comms messages for everyone," the captain replied, dropping his data pad on the dining table.
"Any for me from Mia Colton?" Nevin asked, while stuffing his face.
"I thought you said she was too old for you," Jalesa said. "She's going to be 5 years older now."
"Yeah, but her hot daughter was 14,
Nevin explained, his eyebrows bouncing lasciviously as he dished up another hunk of meat.
"You're a pig,"
Maggie told him, taking the tray of meat away from him.
"I'm a realist," Nevin defended. "We only get a week of shore leave, and it's hard to get laid when every woman you know has aged out."
"Aged out?" Maggie commented with a look of disgust.
"I was right the first time," she said to Jalesa.
"Seems logical to me,"
Erica admitted as she took her seat at the table.
"Maybe it's just the way he says it," Maggie replied.
Erica smiled, dishing up some food for herself.
"Did you do a nav check?" the captain asked Erica.
"We're on the starboard edge of our approach corridor again," she replied. "Nothing I can't fix in our D-cell burn, but that's the third time and the deviation keeps getting worse."
"I'll try to talk maintenance into swapping out the navcom cores," the captain stated. "But don't hold your breath. Those cores aren't cheap."
"I can overhaul them again," Donnie suggested.
"We've got a short turnaround this time," the captain warned.
"I can do two of them if I don't have to help with the cargo cycle," Donnie promised. "I can do the other two during our acceleration burn."
"That only leaves us with one good backup during the outbound burn," the captain pointed out. "I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that."
"Rhea can do the third cross-checks," Erica suggested.
"Rhea's awfully busy during burns," Nevin warned.
"Rhea?"
the captain asked, looking up slightly.
"Nevin is correct," the ship's AI confirmed. "During long burns, my processing matrix is at a 73% average load. However, the confirmation checks on the navigation computer's positioning calculations will only consume 13% of my matrix."
Captain Kinnan sighed.
"I'll think about it. If I temporarily boost the gain on the comm array, we might be able to contact maintenance a day or two earlier," Donnie offered. "Maybe we can get a good deal on some new cores. If we can't, I'll still have time to do the overhauls."
"Worth a shot, I guess," the captain agreed.
"I'll get started as soon as I finish eating," Donnie promised.
"You know the drill," Captain Kinnan reminded his engineer. "Everyone has to get cleared by mags before going to work."
"But her hands are so damned cold,"
Donnie complained.
"And I'm going to make sure they're extra cold just for you," Maggie smiled.
Hannah picked at her food, disinterested in the standard hotel bar fare that was included with her equally standard rooms. She looked at Ariel, who was sitting across the booth from her.
"Why Boston? Why not something on the West Coast?"
"There's nothing good out here right now," Ariel replied. "Most of the assignments out here are fluff anyway. You said you wanted stories with more potential, didn't you?"
"I meant stories that would be more popular, stories that would boost our numbers."
"Look at the assignments on the East Coast boards, Hannah. There are far more to choose from. We can work nearly every day and without doing fluff pieces. Out here, we'd have to do mostly pop culture crap to work that often. Besides, there's a lot more wannabes out here, and they're always bidding jobs down in order to get them. It's harder to make a living out here."
"Couldn't you find anything else to get us out there?"
Hannah asked as she moved the food around on her plate.
"The epidemiologist gig was the only thing that paid enough to cover our travel costs. There were a few others that might have been more interesting, but they were all still TBA. Better to take the shore money."
"Yeah, but it's another virus story," Hannah whined. "Nobody cares about virus stories."
"They do when it affects them.
If someone has Claria, they aren't watching netcasts, Airy. They're dying."
"People dying is news, Hannah.
Only when they're dying in great numbers or grotesque fashion, or both."
"You're not normal," Ariel sighed, taking a bite of her salad. Hannah looked out across the crowded bar. It was Friday night, and the usual mix of businessmen was slowly giving way to tourists spending the weekend downtown.
She noticed Barry as he entered the bar from the hotel lobby, his gear bag slung over his shoulder as usual. Then she noticed he also had his suitcase in tow.
Uh-oh.
Ariel looked up from her dinner, following Hannah's gaze.
Ah, crap.
Barry parked his suitcase at the end of the booth and slid in next to Hannah, stealing a piece of bread from the plate at the center of the table.
Changing rooms?
Ariel asked, knowing full well it was wishful thinking.
Sorry, came Barry's muffled reply, his mouth full of bread. Hey, it's not like you didn't know this day would come.
Who? Hannah asked. Becker Industries. The group that terraforms Stennis?
You're leaving us to do industrial videos?
Ariel couldn't believe what she was hearing.
Hell no, Barry scoffed. They're starting a news division to cover the settlement of Stennis. A lot of people are migrating from both Sorensen and Kohara, not to mention Earth. It's a great opportunity.
But there's nothing there yet, Hannah reminded him.
Not true, Barry corrected. They've already established four cities and several dozen settlements that will soon become cities.
Yeah, I heard the same thing, Ariel agreed. Stennis is booming.
But it's a terraformed world, Hannah argued. Aren't people worried?
Venus was a long time ago, Barry said reassuringly. There have been at least three successful terraformed worlds since then, and all of them are thriving.
It's a corporate world, Barry, Ariel said. You're going to be doing propaganda pieces.
I'm a videographer, Ari. All I care about is the shot, not the story.
And the money, Ariel added.
Yeah, it is good, Barry laughed. Damn good, in fact.
Then you won't mind giving up your cut of today's assignment, will you? After all, you are bailing on your contract.
Keep it, Barry insisted, a big grin on his face. They paid me a fat signing bonus.
What about the gear? Ariel asked.
Most of it was leased. I returned it to the leasing agent an hour ago.
That's what you wanted, right?
Right.
Ariel looked at Hannah, noticing the surprised look on her face. Local company, she explained. They don't allow their gear out of state, at least not without paying extra.
Don't forget the data cores were mine, so remember to add them to your next lease.
When are you leaving? Hannah asked.
Taking the shuttle to Terra Station in about an hour.
I don't suppose I could convince you to leave from Boston after the next assignment, Ariel wondered.
At least then we'd have more time to shop around instead of hiring the first operator who walks in the door.
Sorry, immediate departure was part of the deal.
Barry glanced upward and to his left as he checked the time on his personal visual space. Listen, ladies, it's been great working with you, and I really appreciate you taking on a noob and all, but this is pretty much my dream job, you know.
We understand, Ariel replied in the most professional tone she could muster. She extended her hand across the table.
Good luck, Barry.
Barry smiled as he shook Ariel's hand.
Thanks.
He turned to Hannah, looking her in the eyes. He leaned in and kissed her cheek, then whispered in her ear.
I'll never forget that night in Chicago, Hannah.
Hannah stared ahead, refusing to react.
Right, good luck.
She continued to stare straight ahead at Ariel as Barry rose from the booth, grabbed his bags, and left.
So, Ariel said, I guess sleeping with him didn't work as well as you'd hoped.
It was only that one time and I was drunk, Hannah defended.
You were wiped, Ariel corrected. Now finish your breakfast. We leave in an hour.
26 hours on a train, Hannah complained as she continued eating. We're truly living the dream.
Reactor is humming along at 68%, Donnie reported over the intercom link on the Rihanna Locken's command deck. She is good to full power, but I wouldn't run her above about 85% for too long. We have still got a bit of fluctuation in a few of the containment rings.
Anything we should worry about? The captain asked.
We can just burn the mains a little longer.
Captain Kinnan turned to his pilot.
We've got the propellant for it, Erica assured him. It's going to eat into our safety margin, though.
How much earlier would we have to start the burn?
Erica punched some numbers into the flight computer before responding.
The sooner the better. Prelims show 0330 ship time as the latest we can start, but I'd be more comfortable with an earlier fire-up.
Donnie, the captain called over the intercom, how soon can the mains be ready to burn?
Give me an hour to prime all four, then another hour to complete the warm-up burns.
Captain Kinnan looked at the digital clock on the bulkhead above the lock-in's front windows.
That gets us burning at about 0115. Will that work for you?
He asked his pilot.
That'll do,
Erica promised.
Make it happen, Donnie, the captain instructed. The sooner the better.
You got it,
the engineer acknowledged. "You factored in our drift correction, right?" he asked his pilot. "What do you think?"
"Just asking," the captain said. "Be sure to check your burn calculations with Rhea."
"I know the procedure," Erica assured him. "It's not my first interstellar hop."
"No offense, but it is your first flight on my ship," the captain reminded her. "So pardon me if I double-check you from time to time."
"Sorry," Erica apologized. "My last captain was a bit of an asshole."
"That's all right. I'm a bit of an asshole myself," the captain joked.
"Your reactors always give you problems?" she asked.
"Started 3 cycles ago.
"Why doesn't corporate swap out your core?"
"We're a contract carrier," the captain explained. "Any repairs come out of our profit margin on the run."
"What about the owners?" she asked. "Surely they want to keep their ship running and making money."
"You're looking at the owner," the captain replied.
"You own this ship?"
"Well, technically the bank owns it."
"Wow," Erica exclaimed.
Captain Kinnan looked at her.
"What?"
"It's just that I've never met an owner-operator before."
"Yeah, there aren't many of us. If you don't mind my asking, how did you afford to buy her? The down payment must have been enormous."
"Let's just say I was able to pull the right strings to make it happen and leave it at that."
"Fair enough," Erica agreed, returning to her calculations. "Then it's up to you. You can repair whatever you want."
"Work in the fringe doesn't pay that well," the captain explained.
"Then why don't you work the secondary systems or the core?"
"Stellar Express owns all the core routes, and the secondary systems are mostly under the control of the few remaining shipping corporations that SE hasn't put out of business yet. Besides, we don't have the speed. To work the core, you need at least 80 times light to compete. Best we can do is 10, and the only systems willing to pay for slow cargo from Earth are in the fringe. So we don't have much of a budget for repairs. Luckily, we have Donnie."
"He's good?"
"That man can rebuild anything," the captain bragged.
"Then how can you afford him?"
"He's got some issues."
Erica's brow furrowed.
"What kind of issues?" "Typical story, fell in with the wrong crowd, made some poor choices, choices that have got people looking for him."
Erica nodded.
"So he's hiding out on a long haul?"
10 or 20 cycles, and the people looking for him will either be long dead or too old to give a damn," the captain chuckled.
"Seems like a lot of trouble to go to."
"Well, he's happy keeping this bucket flying," the captain explained. "Truth is, most people who work long hauls do so for one reason or another."
He looked his new pilot over, thinking a moment.
"What about you?"
"Me?
What's your story? You seem like a good pilot. Why'd you take this assignment?"
"I didn't take the assignment," she reminded him. "I took the run."
"Ah, yes. Another starry-eyed young adventure looking to start over on an unexplored world."
"Anything is better than McFallon," Erica insisted.
"I don't know. It seemed nice enough.
It's already getting polluted by the Corps' political bullshit. I want to live somewhere truly independent of the growing galactic order. That means a deep space expedition."
"You do realize the new colonies start out as dependents of the worlds they left, right?"
"Not the well-funded ones," Erica insisted, "especially if they go out beyond the fringe."
"You're talking about corporate colonies."
"Not all well-funded expeditions are to create corporate colonies," Erica insisted. "Some of them are just a collection of families, each with their own means, looking to stake out something of their own, something that no government or bank can take from them."
Captain Kinnan couldn't hold back a chuckle.
"I never pegged you as a farmer."
"I'm not."
"You will be if you end up on a deep space colony."
"I have skills."
"Being a pilot will get you there, but once the colony is started, they won't need a pilot. They dismantle their ships, remember?"
"I'm a weaver."
Captain Kinnan looked at her, puzzled. "You know, with a loom and such, I can weave all kinds of attractive patterns and colors. I'm really quite good."
"Well-funded missions usually carry fabricators."
"I'm pretty good with fabricators as well," she insisted. "Besides, it takes years to take apart the ship and ferry the pieces down to the surface. I suspect my piloting skills will be in demand for a while."
"Assuming you can even get onto such a mission," the captain pointed out. "There are a lot of pilots on Earth."
"That's not what I heard,"
Erica disagreed. "There are always industry experts forecasting pilot shortages, most of which never materialize."
"Maybe," she admitted. "But I have one other thing going for me."
"What's that?"
She looked at him and smiled.
"I'm cute."
The captain chuckled again.
"It worked on you," she reminded him.
"I was desperate."
"Is that why you passed on 4 other applicants before you hired me?"
"You know the failure rate for settlements beyond the fringe is 60%, right?" Those figures are skewed by government to keep settlements within the Sol sector, where they can maintain control over them, Erica told him. Captain Kinnan shook his head.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?